Get the house you want with the payment you want at buywithconrad.com. You don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket to do this at buywithconrad.com. NMLS number 65084, equal housing lender. The first step to buying a house is buywithconrad.com.
One, two, three into the four. Rodeo Double G and Ryan Katz are at the door, ready to make an entrance. So back on up, because you know we about to rip this up. What up, dog? We are in the groove, on the move, and in the doghouse for the latest edition of Oh, You Didn't Know? And I'll tell you what, man, this has been fun and exciting.
It has. It has. Oh, you didn't know, Ryan. You never cease to amaze me. I always love the, the creativity and the energy, man. I'm excited to get into this one because, you know, all the other ones we've talked about, I was in active addiction. So this is one where I might have some clear memories of what actually happened. I'm excited to get into this.
Clarity on this. And before we do, like, the feedback of these first couple of episodes has been really good, man. We're finding our way.
Yeah, it's been very positive, and I appreciate that from all you guys. I appreciate the work that the team does and that you do, Ryan, and just making me look good. So thank you guys very much.
I got to bring up some of the negative criticism I got about my spastic hands and energy, and that came from my mother.
Yeah. Yeah, usually the ones that love us the most hurt us the most. That's sad.
You're a little spastic.
Hands McGanns. We used to call people because you talk with your hands a lot. That's all right. That's all right. That's not bad. We can work on that.
Lose a few pounds.
Yeah, well, you and me both. We'll see if we can still eat in 6 months. How about that?
Well, let's get into it, man, because today we're talking about the return to television of the New Age Outlaws in 2013. At this point, you'd been back with the company for about 2 years or so as a producer. Were you just a producer at that time, or were you dabbling in the creative realm as well?
Yeah, I was also going to Stanford every week and writing on the creative writing team or not writing. Look, when I say I was on the writing team, I had a team of writers. I was not one of them. If you wanted me to type out the script, we'd still be doing the first one I ever wrote. But, I did have a great team around me. And so I could kind of back off a little bit when I was doing this, you know what I mean? So I was actually wearing three different hats at the time. I was a producer, I was on the writing team, and I was now about to start working on TV. So my dance card was full every single day.
Billy gets rehired by the company in late 2012 to work at NXT and developmental. Were you and Billy in close communication at that time as he was coming back in?
Billy and I, and I've said this in an earlier episode, but we grew up together, you know what I mean? Literally. So we are always have been and will always be in close communication. We're really, really, really good friends now. It's almost to the brotherhood thing, you know what I mean? And so we had stated communication. When he came back, you know, he was working for the company. I'll let you ask the next question before I dive into something.
Did you have any sort of influence or decision-making influence in helping bring him back into that role as a coach?
No, none at all. I don't think I ever rose to the ranks of where I could hire or fire a person. Mm-hmm. I did sit in on interviews where we hired people, but I didn't have the, you know, I gave my thumbs up, but I never said, yes, hire him. I've sat in on meetings where people were let go, but I never had the power to do that. So really, even as I went up the ranks a little bit in the company, in the inner circle, I still never had that kind of power. But I knew he was coming back. We had spoke, you know.
So you're in that role as producer. You're involved in the creative aspects of writing. When Billy comes back to the company, was there any talk in those departments of putting you two back on the road together? Or was it two separate deals that were going on, his deal, your deal, and you were living separate lives?
Yeah, two totally separate lives and different departments within the company. You know what I mean? He was a coach down in NXT, and I was a producer on the main roster. And so while I would go to some pay-per-views and run rehearsals or something, just to get to hang out with Billy and Hunter, and you know what I mean? We had a good time kind of creating those entrances and stuff like that together. So we always had a blast doing that. But so I saw him, but it was never about putting us back together or working or you know what I mean? Like for me, that time had come and gone. I never at this point, I couldn't imagine us coming back and wrestling on television anyway.
So let's talk about that. If you couldn't imagine it, what happens when you're approached about making that return?
Well, you know, it was scary. It was scary for me because look, everybody's young and hungry. And now I feel like I'm going to get in there and slow them down. And that's just my inferiority complex, butting heads with my, you know, ego every time. But I figured I could do it if we could control it. And I knew I could control at least the execution of the matches, and I could somewhat control the creative as well. I remember one time, like my back had gone out and I said, hey, I can't work. We were supposed to have a tag match or something. I said, I can't work. So Billy worked a single and I cut a promo or something. But so that was kind of me getting to say, hey, I need the night off. You know what I mean? And so it was while I had that kind of influence, I didn't have much more than that, you know.
Let's talk the execution of entertainment and the New Age Outlaws return to television December 17th at the Slammy Awards. I mean, this is your wheelhouse, an entertainment extravaganza featuring The Voice, featuring the boisterous entertainment value that is the New Age Outlaws. How cool was it to reunite and be on stage together?
Yeah, it was very cool. And I, like you said, it had been over a decade. And so it was, we're taking a look at it here. Like I said, it was Christmas time. So me and Billy had gotten some, if you're watching on YouTube, you see, we had gotten some camo pants and camo hats and stuff. And so we were just having a good time, but the Slammies are always a great time. And you always get to watch great stuff back and go like, ooh, who's going to win that? You know what I mean? And, it just so happened the, category that we were announcing, was comeback of the year. Yep. And it just so happened that Jerry Lawler had a heart attack on television and was back now. And so it was inevitable that Jerry Lawler was going to win comeback of the year because he literally died on television and then came back to do his job again. Like if you don't put him over in that category, I think something's wrong with you.
As we're looking at your facial expression right there, it was because I think you were expecting Billy to drop the patented line and he just kind of ignored it and went to the nominations. You looked pretty surprised right there. Not the way you guys planned the bit.
No, it was exactly how we planned the bit, but it's a wizard, brother. but I did. That was the idea, was he would say, suck it. Oh, but he has something else to say. Here's the category. And he almost messed that up too. Bless his heart.
This is the first time the New Age Outlaws have appeared on WWE TV together as the Outlaws since No Way Out in 2000. 13 years apart is a long time. How did it get? I mean, we just said it, but like hearing the crowd, getting to do the introduction, getting them riled up and behind you, this had to be an exciting moment to make that return.
Yeah, it was very exciting. And look, it's always exciting to get to go out there with a live microphone. Because what we did was on our entrance was so memorable. People today still remember it. You know what I mean? And it's just a crazy energy that's kind of palpable. And it really blows you up as far as your cardio goes. Well, you know, cause I'm not in shape at all. I guess I'm round. That's a shape, but you scream to the top of your lungs. Oh God. And then but it's such a cool rush, to hear all those people saying it back with you. Now, in this run, you know, like you said, it's been 13 years since we were seen on TV. This one, the people, it was pretty much downhill after suck it. You know what I mean? Like, we were just some old guys trying to keep up. You know what I mean?
You say that, but you looked like you had, you were in great shape when doing the introductions. I mean, arms were looking trim. It didn't, you look like you were ready for that. And then just the energy level that you put behind that promo. I mean, we always talk about at the Performance Center, we would talk about trying to have an emotional connection.
Ray, to Ryan, remember when we used to work at the Performance Center?
it seems like that was so long ago.
That was cool.
So, like,
but, I'm sorry.
Emotional connection. I felt you had that emotional connection, and that's why even watching this 9-10 years after that happened, that there's still a moment, and as a fan, a connection that I can go tune in and be like, wow, that was something special. And you can recognize it just watching that clip and hearing the vocal quality and excitement and tone in your voice, your rhythm, your cadence, your energy, just extraordinary.
Yeah. I don't have any idea what you're talking about right now. It's all foreign to me, but I know when I get out there, I give it all I got, and I feel like I can, like if I exude that kind of energy, it kind of comes back to me from the people. It's infectious, I guess. But like I said, on this run, you know, we would do that and then the bell would ring and you would shut me down. And like the people would go like, and Billy would just yell at him, if you'll clap, he'll tag me.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So we had a really good time this run, and we'll get into what it was all about as we go on in the podcast.
Yeah, sure. So the Slammies takes place, you get the reaction, you go through the curtain. Is there a vibe to Vince and those in Gorilla of, did you hear that? They're with us. Maybe there's something we can do right now.
So I think everybody kind of was like, oh, crap, that was good. That was like old days, you know what I mean? But I think, and I may have the order of this all out of whack, but I remember coming back after, I believe it was after the Raw, old school Raw or whatever it was.
Right, where we're going to get to that soon. Yep.
Yeah. We had a match. After that match is when Hunter came to me, and I know that's coming up. So I'll let you ask the question before I answer it.
So let's get to you guys getting into this run. What was the plan for bringing you onto the road, and who made the pitch to actually put this into motion that Road Dogg and Billy Gunn and the Outlaws are coming back?
Yeah, it was Hunter. I mean, it might've been Hunter and Vince, but it was definitely, we came back. Hunter kind of corralled us and said, hey man, what do you think about, you know, doing this for a minute? Maybe we put the tag titles on you and then crown a new team, somebody we want to get behind, you know what I mean? And let them beat you. And he said, just maybe 6 months or something, you know, 3 months, 6 months, we'll see what happens. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. Let me talk to Billy and we'll figure it out. And so it was almost like they saw something like, oh, well, we could use them to help somebody else. And look, so it's not investing in the past, because that's one thing Vince will tell you right to your face. Like, I'm not investing in the past. And you're like, oh, that hurt. But it's the business strategy, right? And it's a correct business strategy. While it's cool to get on there and get a nostalgia pop, I don't know that they were as emotionally invested in us this time. That's what I'm getting at. Not that we didn't come back and do what we did. And I think we did it successfully. But it was just not the same, because it was a nostalgia act, and they love to say, oh, you didn't know. And they love to say, suck it. But okay, now get, you know, Roman Reigns out here.
So let's talk about the conversation that you had with Billy about making this a reality. What were your real thoughts? Were there hesitations? Was there doubt? Or was it just excitement of, hey, this could be one last run to go out and have a good time?
Yeah, well, so there's so many things to take into consideration here, you know what I mean, with the live event. So Michael Hayes came, he was the live event coordinator. He came and said, hey, we're seeing us stepping off some stuff. Will you guys go on and do it? And so he gave us, we went on the road, but we had some, we didn't hit all the towns. We just hit some that he felt he needed us at, and then some that we could make a good payday at. And so there was a lot of talk, and it wasn't contracts or anything like that. It was just like, hey, how are we going to do this? And what are we going to do? You know, we're not going to, Billy has a job. I got a job. Now we're going to do this for 3 or 6 months. And so how are we going to do this? So it was more about talking about, okay, how do we execute this and continue to do what we're doing for the company, you know?
So let's get serious right here with this question. You brought up earlier in the podcast that you were sober in this run as opposed to many of your other runs in the past. You've also brought up and talked in an earlier episode that some of your drug use was based on covering up nerves, anxiety, and all of those things. Being sober in this run, was there more fear and nerves, or were you so comfortable and confident in your new you that you just felt like this was something that you had to do for growth?
Yeah. So there's still nerves. There's still anxiety. There's still walking out there. What am I going to say? What are we going to do? I forgot the spot we call, you know, all kind of crap as you're walking down the ramp there and cutting my promo. But it's so much easier sober. Like I can trust my instincts because my instincts are sharp. You know what I mean? They're and so listening to the people, hearing how they're what they're buying and what they're not buying. If you watch the first match on any show, you go like, okay, if you're a wrestler and you've been doing this a minute, you'll see, oh, we need to work hard, or we can place, you know, do some ha-ha and have some Shakespeare and have a old Memphis match. You know what I mean? We don't have to really go at it. So you kind of got to watch that and then pick it out. So I wasn't so nervous, but also I want to talk about, like, since I've been sober and kind of looking inward and looking introspectively and trying to, you know, find all my defects and change them, I had some coping skills that I literally talked myself through to kind of ease that this time. My coping skills prior to this time were drugs and alcohol. You know what I mean? So this time was, it felt good. I felt good. I felt healthy. I was smarter because of sobriety and because of my age and wisdom and, you know what I mean, years in the business. And so, yeah, it was just a lot easier for me this time because I was smarter. I work smarter, not harder.
For those listeners that can relate and maybe going through something similar, was there something you were able to use for those coping skills to help you get through harder times now that you weren't turning towards?
Yeah, for me, it was prayer. You know what I mean? And me and Billy prayed before every match, and it was just, you know, where I didn't feel alone. And I could go out there and kind of trust myself and do what I needed to do and know that everything, no matter what, everything's going to be okay. I could go out there and say the wrong words. I could go out there and mess up a spot. Who cares? It's not world peace. You know what I mean? It's pro wrestling. And so it's just a different perspective that I have now when I had zero perspective in active addiction.
So let's get into some of the specifics of some of the matches you got into. On December 26th in Detroit, Michigan, it was a live event. Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara were announced to be taking on the Road Scholars of Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow. But the New Age Outlaws ended up replacing Rey and Sin Cara. When were you told that you were going to go on the road to fill in for this match?
We had plenty of warning. Sin Cara, I believe, was injured. And I say that because I believe he was injured throughout his whole contract. So we knew in plenty of time. It was like a Christmas loop. And we knew that Christmas loop usually does really well financially. A lot of people come out and see it. And so you always get a pretty good paycheck. So we knew we were going to have a good Christmas. You know what I mean?
Why do you think they decided to match you guys up with Rhodes and Sandow?
Well, I would imagine from where I am now, I would imagine it was to be just to get us working and get us a win on a live event. They were breaking those guys up anyway. So I think it was just to get us some working wins out there in the public. You know what I mean? And get us a rep.
You guys get the victory in front of about 10,500 fans when Billy hits the famous sir on Cody. And it's been written that you guys got a great reaction when the music hit. What do you remember of that?
So, look, I don't remember that one specifically. A lot of the times when we came out, we got really, really good reactions, and I'm thankful for that. I'm blessed in that way. Me and Billy both are, because, look, we were hot at a time when being hot meant something a little bit in the industry. That came out wrong. Being hot today, same thing as then. That came out totally wrong. But we were, during the Attitude Era, we were a big deal kind of. And so now we come out and get that nostalgia pop. We always got a good reaction when we came out. If we won or lost or whatever, that's a different story.
You guys work the loop, and then you get to wrestle at Madison Square Garden again the next night in front of 14,500, again against the Rhodes Scholars. It's the first time you've wrestled at MSG since December of 2000, and it's also the last time you'll wrestle in MSG. Can you convey what Madison Square Garden means to you and the WWE?
Yeah. Well, look, I definitely think it means more to the WWE than it does to me personally. I'll say it was the Mecca. I don't think it's the Mecca anymore. You know what I mean? And it was always a really hard building to get into and to park around. And it was never that great to me. I'm going to be quite honest with you. I'm not a huge fan of New York City, but
brought it up. I'm going to interrupt you. So yeah, what's the Mecca now? What are the stellar all-star arenas that are the place to be now?
I don't know. I don't know. I know that Barclays Center in Brooklyn is an awesome venue. Mm-hmm. We ran there a bunch of times, and I think it's a much better venue. It's cheaper to run television out of there. That's just me. I know a lot of people will think less of me because I'm saying this, but look, it was a great building. It was, had some great events there. I was on a bunch of them. I got carried out of one of them on a flatboard straight to the emergency room because I thought I was paralyzed. That's a podcast for a different time. So look, a lot of people will call it the Mecca, and I got no problem with that. I just don't 100% agree with them.
You continue on the loop at the Nassau Coliseum, and then in Raleigh, you still continue with wins over Rhodes Scholars. Do you think the WWE was undervaluing Cody and Damian Sandow at this time?
I don't know. Look, I was again a part of creative and a producer and wrestling at this time. I don't think Cody, and I think Cody would be okay with me saying this, and I think he'd agree with me, he wasn't ready to be where he is today at that point. That's for dang sure. Damian Sandow, I felt like, was a great wrestler and could do anything you ask him to do and complete it successfully and execute it in a way where you go like, okay, great. That was great. Thank you. I thought he was best, and I don't mean anything by this negatively, but I thought he was best when he was Mizdow. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so I thought, I don't know. Cody wasn't ready, and neither was he. So I don't think they were undervaluing him. I just thought, look, they had a good little thing together. Then they split him up, and Cody did his thing, which I thought was good too, by the way. I loved working with those guys. They're both great workers. They were just young in this, and we were the old vets, you know what I mean? So we were trying to have just good matches, and we did. We had really good matches with them.
Having these great matches at the live events. Was there any talk of bringing it to television?
No, there wasn't. and the reason being was they were breaking those guys up on television. So they didn't think about us having it. I think we did work with them. We ended up working with them one time, I thought, on TV, but that may have been a live event also. Remember the chair shots and bong resin. Got me a little cloudy.
All right, you guys come off the road and then you do a segment in NXT with a DX and Click reunion type that included Kevin Nash. Damian Sandow interrupts it and it ends with Shawn Michaels hitting him with a super kick. Next question is from a perspective I've seen a lot of fans write in their opinions. Do you think that WWE putting legends over the younger talent was something that hurt the younger talent?
So, yes, I think the short answer is yes, but I don't think it's as cut and dry as that. I don't think it's as black and white as that. It's there's so many variables. And again, I will say this until the end of time. It is subjective, not objective. We are the masters of our own destiny. We can do whatever we want to. It's pro wrestling. It is not a science. It is not, you will not come up with an answer at the end of a math equation and go, ha ha, good wrestling. Like, it is whatever you want it to be. And so we can do whatever we want to do. And I got off on my high horse and I totally forgot what your question was. No, Ryan,
you're on the same track and you answered it with honesty and clarity. So you guys are put back on the road when John Cena comes off. How did these conversations go? You mentioned Michael Hayes kind of wanted to put you on select cities at that point. How does this work out?
Yeah, well, that's when John had something to do. And so we weren't on those shows. Michael reached out to me, said, hey, I'm going to call Billy next. Will you guys do these? So it was all very kid gloves. We were handled with kid gloves on this run. And I appreciated that because I was wearing a lot of hats. And so was Billy. You know, Billy, we would fly for Raw or something, and Billy'd fly back down the next day and have to go straight to the PC to coach. So we both had our hands full. That's for sure.
He was active, and you can bet when he arrived from the airport, he was right back at the performance center in that gym and hurling weights quickly. In Poplar Bluff, Springfield, and Cape Girardeau, the Outlaws get wins over the Rhodes Scholars. As you mentioned, they had been broken up on TV. So at that point, if they've broken up on TV, why does the card not get rearranged on the live events? And why are you still wrestling them as a team? Does that get confusing for them as talent trying to create something and get themselves over?
Yeah, I'm sure it does. On a personal level, like, they want something to sink their teeth into, and now you broke them up and they were like, oh, that's what we were going to do. And then you put them back together the next week on a live event. But, you know, the live events are made up a way in advance and they're booked way out in advance. So you want to try to change them as little as possible. And also, I don't think, you know, using them one more time on a live event loop and using us and getting over, it's not like the main event of the show. You know what I mean? So you didn't change, a title match or anything. It was just a underneath card entertaining match that had some, you know, entertaining stuff in it. And like I said, it was card subject to change. Sometimes that happens. But yeah, I would imagine creatively it would get frustrating being done that way. But look, you get done that way once or twice. You don't get done that way all the time.
I'll just keep pushing, poking, irritating, and building your frustration towards me as I ask these kinds of questions. Does the lack of continuity with TV storylines hurt the live event business?
So I don't think it hurt the live event business. I think America, where it's at, domestically speaking, and we're going to get to overseas, I would imagine, here in a little while. But domestically speaking, like, people don't go out as much, especially lately. You know what I mean? They stop to get. So this live event business is hard. But to your question, I don't think it really bothers people that much. Because I think a lot of people that show up in these towns don't watch, you know, 6 or 7 hours of WWE wrestling every week. Right. They just know the circus is coming to town and I'm going to take my kids to see it. And in some of these cities that we go to, they don't have, you know, circus don't happen no more. That ain't, the Ringling Brothers is done. And so WWE, AEW, Ring of Honor, you know, New Japan, all these guys that travel and do live events, like, they're out there, trying to create a business, but it's hard. Like I said, nobody, you know, you talk about 10,000 people in the arena like that. I don't know if that still happens. I hadn't been out there in a while. So it was just a different time, you know.
Talking about it being hard is the perfect segue and transition to our sponsor of this episode. And we're going to talk about them in a sec. We'll be back to talk about Old School Raw But let's talk about that hard activity that takes place in the boudoir, the bedroom.
Oh, snap.
Hey, guys. Confidence can take you far in life, and it can also help in the bedroom, especially when it comes to stepping up to the plate. And that's where Blue Chew comes in. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same, the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. I mean, I think I got a little blood flow and heat going on.
I think you
right
got
now.
One stuck in your neck. You're going to have a stiff neck for a week.
Flustered. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever the opportunity arises.
Arises.
The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. And
you
the best part?
You know what I love about it?
What
There's
do you love,
no
dog?
Doctor visits, no long lines at the pharmacy, and no awkward conversations. Just a discreet package sent to your door, but nothing will be discreet about your package.
It's time to get off the couch and back to work. If your tool needs an upgrade, head to BlueChew.com. So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, Blue Chew can help. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code DOG at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com promo code DOG to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast. That one went so well because of Bluetooth that
dog.
We went two rounds of music right there. We
yes.
went two rounds.
Yes. That's like Brian Christopher, God rest his soul, in USWA. His music would always hit and it would play all the way through and it would start over again. And you're like, where in the crap is he? And then he'd come out. He didn't care.
All right, we're back at it, and we're going to talk about the show you mentioned earlier, and that's Old School Raw, and it takes place from Buffalo, New York, March 4th, 2013. Dog, how big of a deal is this to you, A, to be back on Raw as a tag team with Billy, B, to be on Old School Raw, where we're bringing back the nostalgia and the memories, and C, getting a win over Primo and Epico?
Yeah, it was all really cool. This was, in my mind, this is when Hunter came to me and said, hey, let's do this. I don't know if that had already happened or not, but this was, when I watched this match, it brought back a memory of like, this is when he said, hey, let's put the titles on you and see what happens here. You know what I mean? So
let's put the match on in the background as we're
okay,
talking
yeah.
about this one. So that's got to be a cool moment. How old are you about at this time?
I don't know. So it's 13. So I'm probably 40, 45.
So to be in your mid-40s and be approached by the boss is saying, hey, we got the confidence that we want to put the championships behind you and then utilize you guys to help build another team and bring the youth up. It's got to feel pretty cool, especially having had some of the circumstances you had before that in the past.
Yeah, for sure. It was a very cool thing, especially with who they wanted to for us to give the titles to when it's time. You know what I mean? And very personal to me, 850 Pensacola boys, the Usos, and used to fly every week with their daddy. And, you know, it just meant a lot to me to do that. What we're watching now, if you're not on YouTube, is that match you talked about on Old School Raw. And I'm doing my entrance here, and I said, we wear your granddad's clothes.
Right.
We look incredible. And see, that was just me listening to a song on the way there, and I go, hey, is this song popular?
Throwing, I think, this little Macklemore at the time.
And it was that song was out and hot right then, you know.
Thrift store. And we're looking at the ring, and this is what the fans love. It's the red, white, and blue old school ropes. It's the old school WWF themed logo on the turnbuckle pads, and then the old school Raw letters on the entrance. For someone like you, who I feel like is a down to business guy, go in the ring, wrestle, do what you're supposed to do, and then going back, do the things like the entrance ways and the sets bring you any sort of excitement or motivation when you go into show, or that's just background and what you do takes place inside the four posts?
Yeah, to be quite honest, it's just background to me, and I kind of have to put it that way. Like, if I want to use a certain thing for a certain camera shot or something, then I will, you know, talk to the cameraman or the floor cameraman or something prior to that and go, hey, I'm going to come up on here and do that. But yeah, not too much. It was all about me and that microphone and you. You know what I mean? You, the viewer, you, the live event attendee. It was about me connecting with you and you getting that rush that is a palpable energy when that's going on. And right here, I'm not sure which one it is. Epico, I think.
That is Epico, I believe.
Yeah, had me in a rear chin lock. And I give him the old, I'll give you, oh, this is the old drop down turnaround. It's a drop down turnaround. He spins around. We double knockout.
And there we got a little double down.
Good. Yeah, it actually looked good. Billy hates that spot because it's the one I do every time.
Rosa Mendez hyped up on the outside. Yeah. Billy hyped up on the outside trying to get that hot tag.
Oh, and the hot tag he did get. And Billy can do it too for people that can feed and bump like these two can, because these two guys are great. Now, if you want to talk about somebody that got underused, it's these two guys in the ring right here, man. They could do it all, and they were there for everything and could bump for everything. That's remember Michael Clark Duncan said that's the best punch in the business. So let's talk about Billy's finish coming up here.
Here comes the setup, goes for the clothesline, boot to the midsection, and boom!
I'll make you famous.
Hooks the leg. I love how he scoops it in tight.
Yeah, yeah. He was down there teaching them kids how to wrestle. He had to do it right.
So what do you think? Does that add extra pressure on him that he's got a group of students that he's got to do the right thing, not just go wrestle a show, but be a good example for those that he's teaching?
Oh, yeah. And I'm looking at the video myself, and like, I'm sure he's not happy with how he looked in this picture, because he is so etched in stone now that he looked off season in this video here.
So it seemed like originally this was supposed to potentially be a one show appearance. And then they kind of changed a promo, a backstage angle, to turn this into a multi-show return. Do you remember how that came about? And was it, once again, something you were excited about, or something like, I'll do the work, but.
Yeah. Look, to be quite honest, I was very excited about it. In a few minutes, as we continue down the road, I'm going to get to where I can't handle it anymore. And we'll cover that when we get there. But right now this was new and exciting. And so it was like, holy crap, I can be a star again. You're going to put the title on me. You know what I mean? All the ego things come in, and the things that are superficial, that aren't real. And you go like, oh, that's cool. But this time I had some coping skills to kind of manage all of that and process all of that, and try to keep my head on straight, because I was working hard and on the road, you know, and I spend my days working hard on the go, where the hands on the clock keep spinning too slow. What was your question again?
It was, what was the plan? But let's move forward. Yeah, one more
there was,
week.
There was no plan. They literally said, hey, we're going to do, and they did change a backstage so that we would be on again the next week. I think it was
March 11th, 2013. Raw takes place from Indianapolis, Indiana. We've got this match. We could throw it on again. Team Road Scholars. And this becomes a little different. Road Dogg and Gunn come out and do their thing. Road Dogg, you get a chance to make a tribute to Percy Pringle, the pallbearer in this match, soon after his passing. What did it mean for you to be able to throw that kind of shout out in your introduction for him?
It was very important to me. I mean, that's why I put it in there. You know what I mean? Like, nobody lets me go out there and say these things. I knew my job. I knew my role. I knew we were PG. I knew, you know what I mean? I'm no longer on drugs. I'm a responsible adult. I'm going to do the right thing, but I'm going to get in this line about Percy. Because he was, you know, early TNA days for me. He rode 6 hours with me and my brother Scott and my dad to Nashville every week. For he lived in Mobile, I live in Pensacola. He would meet us and we would drive every week. So got to know, you know, I knew him anyway, but got to know him really well. And so it meant a lot to me. What I love about this video is Cody Rhodes's mustache.
It's phenomenal.
Do you remember that mustache period? He went through a period of mustache. I have a funny Cape Girardeau story when we get to there.
Well, let's just talk about it now. Let's go to Cape Girardeau then. Tell me about it, because that mustache is phenomenal. And actually, at this point in time, I actually was rocking a handlebar mustache in my pre-WWE months right here. And it's just before I ended up shaving it. So I was a fan of the mustachio.
Yeah, I was too. I think it looked great. But so he just hit me with the, I forget what he used to call
disaster
it.
Disaster kick.
Disaster, but I called it the Jody Arias kick. I don't know why. but I would say, okay, bing, bang, boom, Jody Arias.
As you're laughing about that, there's no laughing matter as Brock Lesnar comes down to the ring. And we see the look of fear on Billy Gunn.
Look at me.
You're selling. Like, you're on the ground dead. You're like, if I don't get up, he doesn't have to do anything to me.
There's some more questions coming that I am prepared for. Like when I saw those right there, I thought, oh, God, can I just roll to the floor?
Billy's got some hard abdominal muscles to absorb those big knees.
Yeah, I don't. So here's how I controlled myself. If you can watch the video, I got to his leg and I literally fell down and I'm holding his leg. So that all I knew he had to do was scoop me up. And then this was a running joke for a long time after this. Boom. You'll see I hit my nose and my private part on the ring really hard on both of them. And if you're wondering, my nose did hit first, but like it hurt so bad. The bump was fine, but like my nose and my privates hurt so bad. And so then it was like a running rib where Vince would make fun of me after that. Like, all right, maybe Brock could F5 you again.
So, Doug, what are you, about 6'4", 250 or so?
Yeah, here. Now I'm 6'4", 300.
And he just tosses you like nothing.
Like it's nothing. And look, I'm going to tell you, I've been in the hands of some men before, and that did not come out wrong. That's exactly how I meant it. I've been in the hands of some men. Ron Simmons, all man. Vader, all man. Terry Funk, different kind of all man. But Brock Lesnar picked me up like it was nothing and controlled me. They took care of me, took me down flat. I mean, I didn't bump weird.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. You talked about thrust earlier. Did he take care of you?
Look, he didn't kill me. He didn't hurt me. He didn't throw me extra. He didn't, you know what I mean? He just did it how he normally does it. But so I, because I was in the writing, on the writing team and it's good to be friends with the king. I said, hey, why don't you hit me with the Jody Arias kick? That way I'll just sell until Brock gets there and you and Billy go at it. Then I'll just kind of come up into your five. So I thought that way I don't have to get beat up by him. I just take his finish. But yeah, that was an interesting story.
I mean, this was kind of the end of the TV run after taking the beating from Brock. Was that the plan? You kind of talked about it. It was a few months to get going. And then it sets up later for the next run where you're going to come back and get those championships.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember what your question was, but let's just talk about fabrics. No, go ahead.
Well, as I was saying, the TV run was done and the fun continued.
Oh, yeah. Look, that was Hunter was on. I'm sorry. I don't remember where we're at. Then I cut you off when you try to tell me.
I got to get the real sound effect. I forgot to do that this week. Next week, it will be a part of this.
You swear.
I swear. I solemnly swear.
Oh, Lord. I totally now forgot what we were talking about.
We're going to end up coming back to regain ourselves. And when we do come back, we're going to talk about the SmackDown European Tour. Before we do, let's take a quick break and then get into the demand for our big international tour.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wall.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
If you could change one thing about your home, what would it be? A new kitchen, a new master bath, maybe put in a pool? What if you could do it with no money out of pocket and cheaper monthly payments? SaveWithConrad.com can help, and you can even skip your next two house payments. NMLS number 65084, Equal Housing Lender, SaveWithConrad.com.
All right, we're back. And as I said, that TV run's come to an end, but it's time to head out on that SmackDown European Tour. It's 11 days and you get 10 matches. That's a big ask. Were you in shape for that?
Yeah, I was, because we were in six mans. And so now I only had to do 33 and a third percent of the work. Let me text Scott Steiner and see if that math is correct. but yeah, so I only had to do one third of the work, you know, and so I was in that much shape. I was in that good a shape. We worked with the Shield every night. And so it was, I think we worked with them every night anyway. It was so easy. And we got the match down and we kept it that way for the whole loop because we changed a few things, but only to make it better. But we kind of knew going in. And when we start talking about the specific matches, I got some stories for that too. But yeah, we had a really good time going over there, and we worked with some really good people. So it was cool.
How far in advance did you find out you were going on this tour and to prepare yourself?
Yeah, and we knew probably a month ahead of time that, hey, we're going to send you guys on this tour. And look, it was genius for them because you can not only use me as a producer on the show, you can also have me have a tag match. You know what I mean? And some of the towns we were the main event, and some of the towns we were, you know, semi-main or whatever. But it was really cool to get to work with those guys.
Do you like the international tours?
Yeah, they're the greatest. International fans. Look, domestic fans are great. Fans are great, period. But international fans, they're not spoiled to it. You know what I mean? It doesn't come around often. And when it does, they show up, man. They show up and show out. It's always a really hot crowd overseas.
I know my experience with NXT when getting to do a lot of international travel was my favorite memories I had in the company, as we got to travel around in the bus and go on these things. And I don't know if it's like this on the main roster of Raw and SmackDown, but at NXT, we generally did get chances to do a little sightseeing and explore the countries and the cities that we were in. And wow, just to be able to have cultural experiences, to be able to talk to the fans who, as you said, not spoiled, have so much enthusiasm, energy, and excitement. Just such an awesome experience.
Yeah, it really is. They're ready. When you get there, they're ready. And they also, you can kind of just play by the rules. You don't have to do anything crazy. You just give them a good match, give them what they expect, and they love it. And it's, look, the first time I've ever was introduced to a overseas thing was when we talked about that when I was the real Double J. We went to Cape Town, South Africa, and we pulled up to the place, and I saw 1,000 people, and 500 of them had Bret the Hitman Hart those glasses, those sunglasses on, yep. You know what I mean? That's when he was the champ and he was the dude. And I'd never seen anything that over in my life before. And all of a sudden it was a different level. Like, oh boy, this is where the big boys play. And now I'm here playing with them. And so that was really cool. But yeah, the fans overseas are always great.
Over in Europe, in the UK, how was the food treating you? It's a change of pace. And I know that for us at NXT, everyone was always looking forward to the banoffee pie at catering. Was there anything you remember of a food item coming from those international?
I mean, it's always the banoffee. And I don't even know what it is, but it's almost like a banana pudding or something with a caramel or I don't really even know, but that's the kind of the consistency. It is so good. But yeah, look, I actually, when you're on a tour like that and you're hitting several towns and you're driving, and a lot of the times they have catering for you. And so they try to do like an international setup, you know? But I even love the, you know, overseas you get breakfast and baked beans and scrambled eggs and blood sausage and all these things that are weird for an American to go over there and eat, but I love it. And Billy and I just talked about it this week. Like, we're going over there soon just to do a signing, and we can't wait for the breakfast with the baked beans and scrambled eggs.
I have consumed my large share of baked beans, and I absolutely enjoy them. But every time I'm there putting them on my plate, I'm just like, this is just weird and not what we do in the States.
I know, but I love it.
And as you said, the others, I don't do this.
You know what else they got great is, man, their fish and chips. And you get those peas mashed up. I think, I don't know what they call them, but that's some of their steak. You can't find a good steak over there, but you can, their cuisine is, I love it. Anyway.
Quick old school performance center fun fact. Back in this time period, I think it was early 2013 when she first got there, Becky Lynch used to make banoffee pies and bring them in for it was something pretty awesome.
Yeah. You know what thing about Becky is, a few people called me when I got fired. She was the first one, and that shocked me. I mean, it really did. It caught me because I didn't know. She proceeded to tell me how she felt about working with me and working on SmackDown with me and all that stuff. And I had no idea she felt that strongly, but she, man, it really touched my heart because she's a good kid, man. And she was always my fave. When I started writing SmackDown, I thought we got to get her in the mix. You know what I mean?
She was the man. She reached out to me when she found out we were doing this podcast and was so psyched about it.
Like, yeah, she's a good nut.
So, all right, I've taken us on a tangent.
Yeah, we've gotten off course.
I'm going to bring it back to the tour. Six matches of the New Age Outlaws and Sheamus versus The Shield. Four matches of the New Age Outlaws and Randy Orton versus The Shield. You talked about six mans. I mean, we're talking some top tier talent in these matches.
Yeah, it was, and look, they were great matches. I got a story for each of them. So Sheamus, the first night, like I said, not only was I the producer of the show, but I was also working in the six man. And so the first night, Sheamus said, let me start. I said, okay, cool. So you start, Sheamus, and me and Billy sit on the apron. So he started, and he probably worked for 8 minutes with us just standing on the apron, and he just beat the crap out of everybody. And then they tagged me in, and it did a little, you know, duck, jab, 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 wiggle, wiggle, knee, 1-2, not today. For those of you who haven't worked with me, that's the wiggle, wiggle, knee. I cover you, 1-2, you kick out. I pick you up. I go to shoot you towards your partner. You reverse it. Ref goes to Billy. You kick me in the back. Bing, bang, boom. We're in the heat. So
there's some sort of formula.
Oh, I know. And if you could hear people putting it together, especially these kids nowadays, I listen and I just go, holy crap, I don't even know what language you're speaking now. But yeah, so the show, the Sheamus works forever. We finally get in there and we do our thing, and the match is fine. It's okay. But you can feel if you take the time and feel the energy in the venue. He was in there way too long, and he was also getting the hot tag where he'd come in and kind of beat everybody up again. You know what I mean? So the next night I said, Sheamus, please don't get in until the hot tag. I said, because you're hot over here. And when I give you that hot tag, people are going to blow the roof off the joint. And he's like, no way. I got to get in before that. I can't just sit there. And I said, dude, you made us sit there last night for 8 minutes where I was literally yelling to Seth Rollins, like, hey, I'm going to go get a chicken sandwich. This place has a great sauce. But anyway, he said he wouldn't do it. He didn't want to do it. I said, Sheamus, do you trust me? And he said, well, yeah, I trust you. And I said, try it this way tonight. And if I'm wrong, we will go the next night right back to your way. Well, it was, you know, I knew I was right to begin with, but it's let Billy get in there. Bing, bang, boom. Tag me. We do a little double something. Here we go to my jabs. We shut me down. No, we're in the heat. And here in a minute, I'm going to tag Sheamus and he's going to blow the roof off the joint. You know what I mean? And it was just the right formula. And if you're honest with yourself and look to and don't think you're just right all the time, like, oh, maybe we could tweak this a little bit and make it better. And so by the third match with Sheamus, we had it down pat where it was hot. And those kids, man, the Shield, they were so much fun to work with. It was a night off, literally.
Talking about knowing you're right, is that coming from your years of experience, or is that being able to read the crowd in the moment?
Well, I think it's just years of experience, but it's also like, it makes perfect sense. Like, we're the novelty guys. Sheamus was like a top guy then, you know what I mean? And we're overseas in his neck of the woods. And I don't know exactly where he was from, but it's overseas. And so they love him. And so hold that horse in the barn until that hot tag. And then it's time to run. You know, there's no reason to hurry in a wrestling match ever, except for during the comeback or when that hot tag starts, and then you better get on your horse because it's time to run. And so to keep him over there on the edge, to give him our little nostalgia act, a little bit of heat, because like I said earlier, they don't really care about me. They just want to hear me say, oh, you didn't know. Do a little bit of heat. We tag Sheamus. And I think we knocked Billy off the apron first, so it wouldn't feel weird that I tagged Sheamus instead of my partner.
So I don't generally quote the Observer too much, but I'm curious on this one from the April 29th, 2013 Observer. SmackDown opened in Glasgow. Main event saw Sheamus and Billy Gunn and Road Dogg beat the Shield via DQ. Really telling not only that the Outlaws, who weren't even main eventers very often in their primes, and a dozen years after come back and headline now. The finish saw a DQ when they triple teamed Sheamus. They were about to give Sheamus the triple team powerbomb when the Outlaws jumped into the ring with chairs. Gunn gave Rollins a famouser, Sheamus gave him a brogue kick, and the Shield left. Are you surprised you're in the main event, or do you take what Meltzer is saying as an insult to the crew at the time?
No, I think it was more to his take has been, and I don't know if me and him ever had a run in or if what, but his take has always seemed to be negative towards us a little bit. And look, maybe it is because we were old guys coming back and working with new guys and beating them and stuff. And maybe he's not happy about that. And that's okay. Opinions, they're like a-holes, everybody's got them and they all stink. But he just, everything you read out of the Observer just seems to have a negative slant. And so it seems like it's somebody in there don't like me and Billy, or they don't like the fact that we're on there stealing spotlight where younger guys should. And that's a valid point. You know what I mean? If that's your point. But yeah, it just feels like they're always burying us. Cause we were main eventers. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of dumbfounded me when I read that in the notes that he said, like, they weren't even main eventers back then. Like, okay. Okay, Uncle Dave.
Continuing the tour, Newcastle, Birmingham, and Sheffield are the same matches. In Birmingham, it's noted you took the heat and hot tagged Sheamus. You talked about that before he was hit for a chair for the DQ. Yep. But Billy never tagged in that match. Do you know why?
I read that in the notes, too, and I don't remember that, to be quite honest with you. But it seems like especially if we didn't, sometimes you get there at that spot in the show and they go, hey, we don't need a whole lot of time. Just get out there and do it. Mm-hmm. And so maybe we just said, or maybe he was injured. Like that tour was rough on us. we called it the Toradol tour because we could get shots of Toradol because it's not a drug. You know what I mean? It's like a strong ibuprofen or something. And so it was me and Billy and Big Show and Dustin Rhodes and everybody in line to get a Toradol shot before we went out there.
In Sheffield, it's noted that you had a sore throat, but you got through the whole shtick while Gunn worked most of the match before the same DQ finish. Was there any sort of bug rolling around, or is this just the rough traveling and exhaustion and all of that kind of taking its toll on everyone?
Yeah, I think it's just taking its toll. We were probably deep in the thing and deep in the tour. And, you know, you drive to a hotel, you get in that hotel, and sometimes the hotels over there ain't great and they're different. And you got to figure out how to turn the lights on and how to flush the toilet and how to plug my phone in. And you know what I mean? So little sleep, a lot of stress, and having to wrestle too. You know what I mean? So it was physically and mentally taking a toll on us.
I used to travel with this 70-pound Pelican case of my camera equipment. And in the UK hotels, they'd be very narrow hallways. And I'd have to lug this clunky, large 70-pound box of a bag or whatever you want to call it through these halls and try to maneuver. And then the small elevators. And as you said, remembering to put a key in the light switch so the light
works. Those elevators are so small. We're basically just having a referendum on overseas. And it kind of works because I'm going soon. Like I said, Billy and I are going over there. I'm excited.
You talk about working with the Shield and how easy it was. Tell me about working with Seth Rollins, Jon Moxley, and Roman Reigns.
Yeah, well, look, it's no secret. Roman was special. His work was even special. His work was different. His work always looked great and was always smooth as silk, and his timing was good. And the heat spot to cut me off every week was a spear, or every night was a spear. He would hit me with the spear. But yeah, so Seth was the great technical worker. Ambrose was the crazy guy that you never knew which hand he was going to punch you with or what feet he's going to kick you with because he's so unorthodox. But Roman worked with a smooth, suave swagger, smooth, suave swagger that you knew there was going to be something special. You know what I mean? There ain't a Samoan that can't get in the ring and have a great match. And that's just all there is to it. But I said this the other day online, like the bloodline of the Inouye family is the greatest wrestling family in the history of wrestling. Like there's no even close second. You know what I mean? Because think about how many champions in their family. And so it just hit me the other day. I was like, wow, what a legacy.
Do you think we're going to see a Shield reunion in WWE sometime in the, I'll call it near future?
Yeah. I think you could. Everybody's saying like, oh, now everybody's saying people are going to jump from AEW back to WWE or whatever. And so that's good. Great. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I would love to see, and tell me at a Mania, if you did the Shield reunion and they, you know, you tell a story and you get three heels that are, you know, in their prime too and hot, and you have that match, that Shield reunion, and they put those fists in, man, that's money. They come down through the crowd. It's crazy. Yeah.
All right, you guys open Cardiff in Wales so the Shield and Fandango could helicopter to London for Raw. How hectic is a situation like that where you got to get some talent in, out, and they got somewhere to be, and now we're talking helicopters? That sounds like something, what I would call an extraordinary situation, and not something that usually takes place.
Yeah, that very seldom happened. Now, we did have a couple of times that have used, you know, flown helicopter people in, but that was great for me because we got to go on first, and then I could just sit around and watch the rest of the matches and not have to worry about, you know, getting on there. And so interesting thing about the tours, you mentioned earlier, Ryan, about the buses and everything. So at this point, me and Billy and Randy Orton are kind of butting heads a little bit. And it's just because Randy's the man And he's been the man for a while. And Randy is the last one on the bus. And Randy's Randy. You know what I mean? And so I was young in sobriety and I was older in my wrestling. And I thought, like, why are we waiting on him? If me and Billy are here, he should be. So that's my ego and my pride talking. And he has the same thing. So he's an alpha with ego and pride too. And so we butted heads a little bit on that tour, but it was after that tour that me and him kind of saw each other and said, hey, are we good, man? And it was, but it didn't help that we worked with some matches in him and it kind of perpetuated it even in the matches, in the execution of the matches, or so I thought. And looking back, it was me being egotistical and thinking he should bow down. You know what I mean? Because, oh, we're the old timers. You gotta bend a little bit. And he was saying, like, no, you bend. And I get it. You know what I mean? Again, we talked when we got back and it was like, we're good, dude. And now Randy and I have actually a great relationship. Where we stay in touch. You know what I mean? It's my dad and his dad, a lot of history together too. So I got a lot in common with Randy. And it just took a minute to get past our egos to realize that, you know.
You were in France in the main event teaming with Randy instead of Sheamus. You guys did the same DQ chair shot finish. How easy is that to just kind of run the same style of match, but replace another competitor into that role, into the different role, and we can roll the footage while we're running. Yep.
Yeah, this is it's not great footage, but it is footage of the finish. The ooh ah, they're gonna do it.
It actually gets crisp and clear right when you come in the ring with that.
Yeah, with that chair. So. Look, this is what you get the DQ because they weren't huge top guys yet, but they were well on their way. And this was just, you leave them happy. You get the DQ so you don't just beat them, but then you leave the people happy and Randy hits them with an RKO. So it's your question about the match and the execution, slipping different guys in there. It was great because we just kept the same. Once Sheamus didn't have to get in there first anymore, we just kept that same thing where Randy stayed on the apron until the hot tag too. So the difference was Randy you see Randy today on TV and Randy is on fire, bro. He is on fire and I love watching him wrestle. Here, I feel like he was not motivated and he was moving slow. And so we just came from hot tagging Sheamus, which is like opening the barn door and letting a bull come into the kitchen. And then to tagging Randy, where he comes in and kind of smoothly does his stuff. You know what I mean? And so I would have, like the Randy right now that I'm seeing on TV, if he would have done that stuff, right, the roof would have blown. Look, the roof still blew off the place. He was Randy friggin' Orton, and he hit a RKO at the end of the night, you know what I mean, on Seth Rollins. So the roof still blew off the place, and he's still awesome. But, like, it was very different to go from Sheamus to Randy, who is literally no need to ask. He's a smooth operator. He's so good, man. So good.
You move on to Italy and working in Bologna and Trieste before moving on to Germany in front of 10,000 fans.
It's Bologna, you moron.
Bologna has the first name.
I'm just kidding.
How hot was business in Europe at the time, man? We talk about the energy of the fan base. How good is business?
Yeah, business was good. Business is always good over there. It really is. Like they're not spoiled. They want to see it and they come out and they pop for it. And so I don't know, man. They're just always a really good crowd internationally. And so
business was booming. Yeah, let's go to a clip from Germany in Mannheim where you're back with Sheamus in this one. And once again, the crowds are just super hot throughout. I mean, European crowd, UK crowd, all of those shows. I remember watching, I think it was Jason Jordan and Chad Gable, American Alpha versus Blake and Murphy for the NXT Tag Team Championships. And I think the crowd chanted for 14 straight minutes before they ever locked up. I mean, the endurance of the crowd.
Yeah, if nothing else, the stamina.
And then the creativity of the chants. I mean, you get hot crowds in America and you get awesome pops and energy and they're cheering and yelling and screaming. But in Europe and in the UK, we're talking songs and melody and just
yeah, lullabies and all kind of stuff. Yeah, they are very creative, and they will go. And look, that's truth be told, there's nothing better than like a good raw over there when the crowd really gets riled up, because then you kind of find out, okay, who are they emotionally invested in? Who do they want to yell at and anger, or who do they want to support? And man, they don't mind doing it. And so, yeah, it's always fun. It's always a real energy that's, you know what I mean? It's, you can feel that energy out there.
You finished the tour in Cologne, Germany with the same match, Sheamus against the Shield, and then it's the end of the run. Did you
it's
know?
It's Cologne, moron.
Man, I'm wrong, and I'm going to be this crazy. Did you know that was going to be it for the European tour? That was going to be it? Or, well, where are we at in your mindset at this point?
So, yeah, I was getting shots in my knees. It was like friggin' North Dallas 40 in the training room, minus the cocaine on this run. But look, I was feeling it for dang sure, physically in my body, but mentally too. So I kind of was like, okay, are we good now? Can we? but we'll see what the future holds as we continue.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up the European tour, let's take one more quick break. And when we come back, we'll finish up the comeback and we'll get to some of the fan questions from all of you guys.
Psst. Who's going to take care of your family if something happens to you? What would they do without your income?
If you don't have a plan, you need to go to GoliathLife.com. Get a quick quote for more than 20 carriers. You don't even have to leave the house. If you need a medical exam, they'll send somebody to your house or office. You're in total control. You pick the rates, you pick the payments, you pick the terms. You're in total control, but it gives you and your family peace of mind. What if something happens to your income? Hurry to GoliathLife.com.
Dog, we are back. And I'm just thinking with the tour and wrestling and your existing job, you're working double duty. And as you talked, even triple duty involved in creative, just how stressful is all of it? It's hard enough to just go be a worker and plan your matches. It's hard enough to just be a producer and take care of your responsibilities. When you have all of these things, how do you juggle it and make sure that they're all getting the attention that they need?
Well, that was the deal. You're all, you know, and look, even if you just have one job to do, you're always searching for balance, right? Of how do I balance my work life and my social life, or you're always searching for balance. So it's not something that you're going to attain and be perfect at it. But for as long as I could, I kept up the facade that everything was going all right. My body was killing me. I was stressed out. I was having to bring extra bags on the road because I was wrestling now. And so I don't know if this was the point or not, where I said it, but I went to Hunter and said, hey man, I can't do this anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I want to go back to the job that you hired me for this time. Billy wasn't real happy about that, but he understood. I think he wanted to keep going, as you can see from now, right now, he's still doing it. But I couldn't do it anymore. And I was really starting to like writing with the shows and coming up with creative and, you know what I mean? Coming up with cool spots and matches, cool finishes and entrances and all, just kind of being creative. I wasn't being able to singularly focus on that. And so I really wanted to put my friggin' gear back up and get back to my job, you know?
So as you talk about that and knowing the conversations you had previously with Hunter about that, the point of this comeback was to set up a future championship run. Was there doubts that your body was going to hold up and you knew that you've moved on to something that's more fulfilling for you at this point in your life?
Yeah, but it was, and look, I'm a little bit, to be quite honest, confused about whether we went on to hold the titles after that.
It was a little bit after. It was 2015.
Okay. So that's when he's, you know, we had done this a little bit, and that's when he said, well, look, let's do it a little more and let's put the titles on you and let's let the Usos take them off of you to, that'll be the final thing. And so we agreed to do it a little while longer, and we'll get into that, I'm sure, at some point.
What was your fondest memory of this run?
So, to be quite honest, probably that tour.
Yeah.
Like, it was really cool. Look, it's awesome to go over there, even as a producer, and go on a tour. And you, I mean, there's a lot more responsibility when you're a producer. You can't just party and end up wherever you end up. But it's really cool to be to do that and be with the boys and kind of. It was a balancing act for sure to kind of dress in the locker room, but not fraternize with the boys. And you got to not fraternize, but put a match together with two guys since there are three guys. And so it was, you know, like I said, it was definitely a balancing act. And it was like, hey, I probably need to sit down for a minute, you know.
Those WWE logos carry so much weight overseas and they attract so much attention. And then the fact that, look, you're 6'4", like you attract all that attention on your own. I just remember we did a tryout in Cologne, Germany. And in one of the main like city squares in front of the big cathedral, we had 40 tryout competitors doing calisthenics and runs just through the city. And we were just creating this spectacle. And yeah, it's just what WWE really does.
I've seen footage of that. Those guys running through the city. And I've seen footage of that.
And yelling, and it's echoing through the cavernous styles of these.
Look, it's a global entertainment conglomerate. There's no two ways about it. It's a huge, you know, entertainment company, and it's global. It is global.
So, harder question right here. Least fond memory of the tour, something that you wish you could, or of the run, excuse me, something that you could put behind, that you wish you could put behind you a little bit. Maybe it didn't go exactly as you wanted it to go.
You know what? It did. It went how it was supposed to go. And so that's whether, you know, I don't want to hold regrets and I don't want to have any resentments or anything. Like the one thing I don't like that Randy and I had a little bit of a dust up, right. Even though we, you know, cause I know that was my ego. That was me thinking I was more than I am. And me trying to, bend him to my will almost, you know what I mean? And not physically, not in a way like that, but it was me trying to bow up on him and him doing the same to me and us going, hey, what's going to happen here? You know? And so it was, I regret that happened, but that's just me growing and learning, you know?
As we push through this run, let's move towards these fan questions. And I've got one from adfreeshows.com member Slapnut Devin Dowling. And he asks you, is there any moment where Vince McMahon had to say to you, hey, remember, this is PG?
And I covered that earlier. I knew. And look, sobriety helps you remember that. And also job security will help you remember that. So my thing didn't even say your ass better call somebody. It just said you better call somebody. So I knew what side of the biscuit was buttered. You know what I mean? And who was doing the buttering. So no, he never had to tell me, hey, remember, this is PG. I kept it PG because I wanted to keep my job.
Slapnut two count _ Kyle asks, you've come up against some monsters in your career. Where would Brock Lesnar rate among the scariest? Also, I enjoyed the first show and I'm really excited to see where it goes.
Oh, he's probably just going to go next week. It's going to air again. Slapnut. That's a great word. So Brock is the beast incarnate. Brock is the one. Kurt Angle is a machine, but he's a machine on a different level. He's like wrestling the friggin' Terminator. But Brock was a beast. And Brock, when you're in his grasp, you know that there's nothing you can do about it. And so there was a real fear for me. And look, if you call me a sissy or whatever you want to call me, that's fine. Because that's where I draw the line is fighting that guy.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's calling you a sissy in regard to Dr. I think we're all feeling the same sort of thing. Why not only a WWE champion, a UFC champion, and all around guy who could probably tear me limb from limb.
Yes.
And then he'd cook it up and make it
like, with, on one of his like 8 green eggs he has around his farmland.
He'd smoke my meat.
Wait, is this a Blue Chew commercial?
All right. Another question from the fans, adfreeshows.com. Top guy, Middle Kingdom Wrestling asks, for one final run as the New Age Outlaws, which 3 current tag teams would you choose to work with? Here's a good one. Let's get into some teams right here, dog.
Yeah, well, look, I'd love to work with the Street Profits. I'd love to work with RK-Bro. I couldn't keep up with Riddle, but Randy, I would love to just feel, this sounds weird, or maybe it's exactly how I want it to sound. None of your business. I just want to feel what he feels like in the ring. You know what I mean? And because I tagged with him, I never worked against him. So I don't know. Is he tense? Is he smooth? You know what I mean? I just love to, because look, I'm a huge fan of Randy, and I have been since Randy was young, because Randy got, and I say this all the time, and it's so hard to decipher, but he's a television. Look, he's a great wrestler, period. He knows what to do and when to do it. He knows exactly how hard to go and how hard he needs to go and when he needs to go that hard. He is the perfect wrestler, in my opinion, especially on television. He's been that way for 15 years now. You know what I mean? So it's incredible the run he's had and the run he's on right now. So Street Profits, RK-Bro, totally want to work with Jad Gable and Pluto. What's his name?
Otis.
Totally want to work with them because I think they'd be great too. But you know who else is? I would love to work with the grizzled young veterans.
Incredible.
Like those guys. Yeah. I don't want to work with Imperium because they're just too stiff and they just beat you up. Like, I don't want to work with you. I want to work with you when I was 25, when I was when I was brand new in the business and still didn't know anybody. That's when I want to work with Imperium.
So talking about guys working stiff and working a little harder, Randy Orton in a recent interview made a comment that the kids from NXT don't know how to work. And when they come up to Raw or SmackDown, they're not in the ring protecting their opponent and that they have different priorities. What would you say to something like that?
I don't disagree with him at all. I mean, look, for him to say they don't know what they're doing, like, okay. I mean, I guess you can say that, and he's right to an extent. But they know what they're doing. They just don't do it perfectly yet. You know what I mean? They don't do it as well as you do, Randy. And I don't expect them to, but protecting your opponent. Look, these young guys get in there and hit each other hard and do stuff, because it's not just stiff working. Now it's huge stunts and flips and to the floor. And you know what I mean? And it's like, holy mackerel. And so you have to protect yourself and you have to protect your opponent, because at the end of the day, it is a work and it is a job. And I have to go home to my wife and children and be able to walk and pick up my grandchildren when I'm, you know, at my age. So I totally understand where Randy's coming from. I think Randy is correct, but where else, you know what? Sometimes guys go up there really early and they've never worked anywhere before. Some guys started during the pandemic and never worked in front of a live crowd, and their character kind of took on. So they're up there now. You know what I mean? And look, I saw Randy literally, on the show talking to those Street Profits as the match was going on, and he was in the ring with them. And I just thought, man, that's so awesome. Randy's teaching these kids as he's having a match with them, is on the job training. That's how you have to do it, because it was a different animal down there. It was more of a wrestling show. And so the tempo was faster, the speed was faster, and the wrestling was more important. On the main roster though, it's about, you know, flamboyance and entertainment. And because it's not all 25-year-old dudes in black t-shirts that watch Raw, families watch Raw. And so you got to give them these entertainment segments, like the wedding segment that happened the other week. And you got to hit them with this more colorful entertainment, because that's what plays to the bigger audience. You know what I mean? I know people will disagree with that, but That's how I see it. You know what I mean?
Show and having a little bit of something for everyone. Going back to this hard hitting style, though, I received a text a couple of weeks ago or a few weeks ago from a buddy of mine who I'll call a casual fan. And he was watching back WrestleMania late. And he was just telling me, he's just like, I'm watching slow motion replays where feet are hitting faces and moving body parts. He's like, how do they do it? Smiles. How do they do it?
Yeah.
Just like, getting there.
You grit your teeth and get kicked in the face. And that's, you know, look, that's the name of the game, man. It's a nature of the beast. It ain't ballet, but it don't have to be real either. You know, there's got to be a happy medium. And that was always my mantra was always the faker, the better.
So the ain't ballet statement, have you ever seen the feet and the toes of the ballet dancers who have to balance on these things and like break their bones and manipulate their joints so they can, I don't know if it's the right phrase we need to
use. Maybe it's not botany.
It ain't fly fishing. All right, another question from the fans. Top guy Brad Stanton asks, did you think the Shield could be a more popular stable than DX?
You know, we always compare everything, and I hate it when we compare because it's somebody loses, and there's no loser in this. The Shield was a hugely successful faction, and like we spoke about earlier, could be again and even more successful this time as far as personal, you know, finances go for those guys and business for the company. So I think they're a huge success, but I think the DX was a different time and a different energy and you know what I mean? It's apples and oranges. And so we always go like, oh, who would you like to work with today? Well, I'm frigging 52 years old and fat. I don't want to work with anybody today. And oh, well, are they as good as you? Well, I don't know. They were all better wrestlers than I was personally. But I don't know. Like I worked with them on a pay-per-view on a WrestleMania.
I talked about Dusty Rhodes saying the difference between good and great is time. And I think if we compare the two factions at this point, DX just has longevity. They've been a part of multiple eras and they keep coming back and the nostalgia is there. Whereas if the Shield has that huge reunion and then it sets the, you know, the pace for the future to have different comebacks, reunions, et cetera, then maybe in the future. But at this point, as successful as both were, I think DX just had a global impact into pop culture that may not be represented at this phase of what the Shield has done.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. But look, let's talk about those three individuals for a moment. Like John Moxley has found himself, you know what I mean? And all the buzz that he gets around the wrestling world, he deserves. Seth Rollins, I think, is doing his best work ever. I literally love this character he's doing. He can work so great. Like everybody knows he's the architect or whatever, but he's the technician. So he can work great. And he has great ideas and he's timing and his ring presence and all
his
that thing.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
Entrance now. The
yeah. Yes. He is. I'd throw Becky in there too. I think she's hit her stride too. But we're not talking about the women. We're talking about the Shield. Go back to Roman Reigns. If you don't think Roman Reigns has hit his stride right now, then you're just a hater. You know what I mean? And that's cool. If you don't like WWE, if you don't like Roman Reigns, okay, cool. Don't like him, but don't say he sucks because that's a lie. You know what I mean? The dude's selling merch and main event and manias and he's doing it all. He's on top of the world and he's not getting DUIs. He's not, you know what I mean? He's a good dude that has his head on his shoulders and he's the man. And so I'd say those three are doing pretty damn good right now, to be quite honest with you.
Dog Dayton J at Danks Dayton wants to know, when you guys returned, did you think about moving in different directions as the previous, or was it a case of why change a good thing?
Yeah, it was definitely, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And that's a buddy of mine from the UK, as a matter of fact, this Danks. So what's up, Day? Thanks for the question. Yeah, we knew if we were going to get back together, we were going to do it. And we were going to, you know, the Outlaws are going to ride again. And again, we just knew it wasn't the same. You can't bottle lightning. You know what I mean? Lightning don't strike twice. And so we knew it wasn't going to be the same, but it was a good opportunity to do a little something and stroke my ego a little bit and fatten my wallet a little bit.
Instagram, a wrestling historian at Let's Go Back to WCW wants to know, how difficult was it for you and Billy Gunn to mend fences with Triple H following that time period of animosity?
So it didn't take long. I mean, it just took us kind of, look, we've been friends for a long time. And so I mentioned this before, brothers fight, friends argue. It was one of those things where we both came back sober. We both came back clear-minded and we were both able to have grown-up conversations with the men that we were hurling insults at. You know what I mean? So it wasn't hard. It wasn't difficult. It was uncomfortable until we had that conversation because I just didn't know how much and how into it they had gotten and if they held a grudge, you know what I mean? And so we talked about it and all's fair in love and war and everything was fine.
Cardinals 5-3 Bulls playoffs versus MIL at Michael Berry Sr. wants to know, who is your favorite team to face during the 2013 return, and why was it the Usos? See what I did there? Hashtag ask Road Dog. Hashtag oh, you didn't know. Hashtag love you, Brian.
Yes. I think his name is Michael Berry. Is that who it was?
It is, yes.
Yeah, I know him. But great question. Yeah, it was the Usos. I mean, you answered it correctly. And it was all for the same reason. Like, these are young kids that I can help. And that's totally the way I looked at it, is like, how can I? Sure, I'll take the money and sure, I'll take the television time and all that. But how can I help them with what the opportunity I've been given? And I'll never forget, we were in the middle of a match. It might have been the one in Chicago where we dropped the titles to them. And one of the Usos had me in a rear chin lock. Or no, excuse me, I had him in a rear chin lock. And I said, lay all the way down. And so he laid all the way down. I laid all the way down on top of him. And then I said, just breathe. And so we started just breathing. And he said, dog, I feel like we should be doing something. I said, we are doing something. I'm catching my breath and I'm letting everybody in here go, have nowhere to go but up. You know what I mean? So we laid there long enough. And here in a minute, somebody started clapping. I said, start moving. And so he started moving and somebody else started clapping. You know what I mean? And so it was, even if I'm just teaching you to slow down for a second and listen and let the people catch up and let them react and listen to their reaction. And how should we get out of this? Should we just do what we have planned, or just something, you know, we need to call an audible here? And so they started clapping here. He started coming. I said, start doing the worm, or, you know, the wave. So he started doing the, you know, break dancing with his arms and stuff. And I said, okay, give me a couple elbows in the, you know? And so it was just an opportunity for me to slow them down and go, even when we go down and stop, we're still doing something, because when the crowd stops doing anything, in a minute they'll start. You know what I mean? And so, okay, well, we're going to lay here. When that one guy starts clapping, you go, okay, start moving. And so you start fighting a little bit, like, oh, I got to get up. So that was a little lesson I taught them that day. It was, even if it was just slow down and catch your breath, you know what I mean? But it was just an honor to get to work with them and kind of pass that baton a little bit to them.
At what point in your career as a performer does that really click in, the slowing down? As a young wrestler, obviously you're generally trying to get your shit in. You're trying to do as much as you can, pop the crowd, get those moments. But one of the things that I love most was getting to listen to the producers on the headset, and a guy like Terry Taylor, when calling a match in the back on the headset, just telling the two people in the ring, take it easy and chill and wait. And then they're hurrying, like, you got that rear chin, and everyone in the crowd wants to start the clap and you'd have Terry on the headset and be like, not yet.
Yeah. And sometimes you have to let the clap die and start over. You know what I mean? Because it's not, heck, you just look, the crowd's impatient too. So you get hip tossed and you're in an arm drag or arm bar on the mat, and the people start clapping and you go, crap, we're not even in the heat or anything yet. Like, you know, we haven't really even done anything or established any dominance one way or the other. So calm down, people. But yeah, sometimes you have to go, that's, look, you just hit them with that big move. It ain't time to get up and start running yet. Calm down, settle down, breathe, see what happens, and we'll go from there. You know what I mean? There's no hurry. But yeah, they're young people and they want to get their stuff in, and they got this long to do it in, and by God, they're going to get it in. But it's fun.
All right. I got one more question from you from Ben Hawk Weston, at Ben underscore Weston. Road Dog, you're still one of my all time favorites and always will be. My question is, when a tag team is formed, who has more input into forming it, the wrestlers or the company?
Well, look, the company is the short answer. The company always is going to make the final call. Usually they come up with the ideas about, hey, we're going to put you two together. But the wrestlers matter too. Their input matters. And so if you got two guys, look, it was the way it was with me and Billy. We kind of said, look, we want to start doing this. We want to be a team, you know, and then they did that for us and started booking us that way. But I think when you see people and you go, oh man, those people should just be a team. He should be with him or she should be with her. And it just makes sense to you. So it's, so for the most part, it's the company. But look, it's not as cut and dry as you think. Like you can tell a talent an idea and they'll say, I don't feel comfortable doing that. I don't like that. I don't think that's good. Okay, well, let's sit down and have a conversation then. And you tell me, here's where we're trying to get. Maybe we can meet in the middle. It's not like you do this because I said so. You know what I mean? It's never that way. The wrestler always has input. But sometimes it's, you get talked in a circle and you go, here's my input. And they go, yeah, but that's, we want to do it because of this. And you go like, oh, okay. I didn't think of that, you know? And so you end up doing it for them. But yeah, look, there's creative juices and they're not just from the company. The talent and the company has conversations all the time. So yes, it's, but the company makes the final decision. The booker, we don't have bookers anymore, but the writing team and Vince.
We got a booker.
We got five times.
Yeah, man. Well, we did it again, man. Another week, another episode, another moment in time of your life that we got to take a trip down memory lane.
Yes, we did. And I appreciate you guys coming, taking that walk with us. If you're not down, I don't know. I don't want to say suck it yet, but I just did. So whatever. What's next for us, Ryan? What's next week?
Next week, we're going to have our first guest in the doghouse. And it's going to be your brother, Scott Armstrong.
My bro. My big bro. Scott, I hope he doesn't try to tell me what to do. He always tries to, because he's my oldest brother. So he kind of raised me. He bought me my first car. True story. Wow. Yeah. And we've worked together the last 10 years. So it'll be great having him in here. He's kind of learning about the WrestleCons and the, you know, and getting doing the podcast thing. And so now that we're unemployed, we're trying new ventures. And what the hell? Maybe we'll even share a Blue Chew.
He's done it all. He's dealt with you as a brother, as a wrestler, worked in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, WCW, transitioning into a referee, TNA, WWE as a referee, and even as a heel referee too. His release, his return, his work as a producer, his recent end, his run in WWE. What are you most excited to talk to your brother about?
Well, you know, truth be told, I just love to hear his take, because when we talk, we don't talk about this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? We just talk about grandkids and life and love, whatever. So this will be interesting to hear his take on the, look, he's been in the business for 40 years. You know what I mean? So he started out as like a promoter for my dad, and he ran the office, and you know what I mean? So he's done everything in this industry, and he's done it for a really long time.
Also a fan of candy and likes to cook.
Loves candy, and what a cook he is. Man, if you follow him on any of his social media accounts, you will know he makes some biscuits and he uses like 7-Up or Sprite or something in them. Like, I don't know. But it's, yeah, it's crazy good. He's a great cook. It might be why I'm so fat right now.
Man, we thanking everyone for tuning in, watching, subscribing, and sharing these podcast episodes. I'm Ryan Katz, that guy right there. He's the Road Dog, and this has been...
Oh, you didn't know.